Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. We're delighted to be with you here. This is the Shabbat is just beginning to occur here in the U.S. Virgin Islands, where you are, Kirk. It's probably 4 days away. And the People's Republic of California. It was an interesting week with the President, Weekend at Bernie's, announcing that he was too old and feeble to run for president. Oh, what would make him too old and feeble to be president? But let's not bring right. that up, because then you'd have Kamala Harris as president. You've got his address. You've got Kamala, the classy Kamala, that decided that she would rather attend a college fraternity party than she would do her job and be the chairwoman for a joint session of Congress. That is actually her job. But no, a fraternity, a college fraternity function was more important to her. And then she doesn't even have the character to say, I didn't want to be there because my fellow progressives despise Israel and Netanyahu. No, she just said it was a scheduling conflict. Then she has her meeting with Netanyahu and comes out and brags that the second phase of the hostage deal has an end to the war. This is an exceedingly evil woman. The Democratic Party has gone from comatose to appalling. It's a woman who has absolutely no qualifications to be vice president, much less right. president. But she is far worse than just incompetent. My dogs would be incompetent to be president of the United States, but they're not evil. She is, mm-hmm. and she has absolutely no character. She's a very, very dangerous person. Netanyahu's speech, probably his worst. He had many elements of the speech which were quite good, but his delivery and his timing were very poor. It was obvious that he was trying desperately to give dramatic impact, and his enunciation and his emphasis just did not work at any point during the speech. He tried to make it inclusive by bringing in various elements and praised a Muslim that was in the IDF as if that was a good thing. But here's the bottom line. I've said this many times. There are two things that Israel is doing, many things that Israel is doing incorrectly, but two in particular that I want to talk about tonight. One is that so long as Israel continues to parrot the myth of Palestinians, so long as they do not, from their media and from every politician, in unison, exclaim there is no such thing as a Palestinian, there can never be a Palestinian state, The Muslims that are here originate from many different countries, Jordan primarily, but also Syria, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt. Gaza was part of Egypt, but Egypt doesn't want it back. The Muslims living in the West Bank were part of Jordan, but Jordan doesn't want them back. But they're not Palestinians. The last Palestinian was eliminated well over 2,300 years ago, and most of them were eliminated almost 3,000 years ago. And even when they existed, they were not a civilization. They were a group of bandits, mean-spirited, uneducated, illiterate, and vicious. They were the worst of humanity, and that says a lot. They were also foreign invaders even then. And if you're going to use the name, then the only place the name is known is through the prophets and the writings amongst Yahweh's prophets and his oracles. And you use them, and the definition of a Philistine is a foreign invader and terrorist. And you realize that they do not belong there, and they were savages. This is not their home. And if you don't use that, then the people never existed because nothing else is known of them. So it is a complete marketing myth, and so long as Israel continues to give lip service to it, they will lose, because it will eventually lead, and I think it's within 2 years, I think it will happen, in May of 2026. Israel will be capitulated into awarding what I would call the final solution, the moment that a terrorist state of Islam is carved out of Israel and they lose the ability to police it, to minimize the amount of weapons in it, no matter what the world says, no matter what the world has ever said about policing and monitoring, protecting Israel's right to exist and minimizing the weapons in a Islamic enclave next to it. They have never honored any of their commitments, and it will become rife with all manner of weaponry. And the reality is that what occurred on October 7th, as savage as it was, and it was amongst the most savage events in human history. The Muslims went so far as to cut off the legs of the women that they were holding hostage and rape them even as they were bleeding to death. There's never been a more disgusting group of people than these Muslims. And then you have protesters around the world that are flying the Hamas flag and that are rallying on behalf of the Islamic terrorists. Kamala Harris is one that would shout down anyone who would protest against the Fakistinians. And it's ubiquitous among younger people in the West and in America and also in Europe. They're just too stupid, too ignorant to be anything but a danger to themselves and the rest of the world. And all the while, Israel is being accused of genocide when their practices in urban warfare are the least genocidal in the history of urban warfare. No one has ever come close to protecting civilians to the degree that Israel is doing. And frankly, there are no civilians. Everyone in Gaza is complicit. Even the youngest of the Gazians has already been indoctrinated to hate Jews. They are vipers. And they will grow up to be terrorists, and nothing will stop that. So there is no reason to protect anybody in Gaza, and yet Jews are doing a marvelous job while being accused of genocide by moronic Muslims and progressives, all the while the overt statements of these rioting and protesting Muslims and progressives is from the river to the sea. Palestine will be free. There is no Palestine. And there has never been any freedom in Islam. Islam actually means submission, and all Muslims are slaves to Allah. There is no democracy, and the Islamic world never will be. So this is the craziness that we live in, and so long as Jews give lip service to the existence of Palestinians, they're doomed, because they will not survive the imposition of a Islamic state carved out of their heart. The second thing that that Netanyahu did that is incorrect, and it's pervasive amongst all Israelis, they want to declare war against Hamas and say they're fighting against a terrorist organization. Hamas is meaningless. First of all, Israel has zero chance of ever eradicating Gaza of Hamas, even if they dropped nuclear bombs, which they're not going to do. And they killed every Gazian. There are more Hamas and in Judea and Samaria and the areas controlled by the Palestinian Authority than there are those who are in favor of the Palestinian Authority. So Hamas is an Islamic fundamentalist club, a terrorist right. organization that is motivated by pure and simple, unadulterated, regular Islam, not radical mm-hmm. Islam, just regular Islam. All good Muslims are terrorists, according to the Quran. So by saying that they're fighting against Hamas, a terrorist organization, they're missing the entire point. They're not fighting against Hamas. Hamas isn't who attacked them. The fact is that the majority of the militants that came in Israel were not even affiliated with Hamas anyway. They were either just regular unaffiliated Muslims or they were Islamic Jihad.
Correct.
And so Hamas is meaningless. It's like saying mm-hmm. I'm going to solve chicken pox by washing a person down with water. No. You can't lash out against a symptom and think that you're fighting against the actual cause. Muslims
right.
declared war on Jews 1,400 years ago. They perpetrated genocide against Jews in Arabia. Literally. And in a subsequent show, I just don't have it handy tonight, otherwise I would go through it. But if you look at the population of Jews throughout what mm-hmm. would be the Islamic Middle East as of 1948, and then you look at the quantity of Jews in all of those countries since 1948, it's been a 99.9% reduction in Jews.
Right. Yes.
Now, that is genocide to the extreme. At the same time, the number of Muslims in Israel has grown tenfold. So the Muslims in Israel has grown tenfold, and the Jews and all of the Islamic nations has declined 99.9%. And yet progressives are so stupid, they want to point their fingers and say that the problem is the Jews. So when you're fighting something like this, you need to be really blunt. You can't play into the lie. And that's unfortunately what Netanyahu did throughout his speech. Israel wants so badly to be accepted that they play along and they use terminology they think that won't be offensive. But I'm sorry, Islam declared war on you 1,400 years ago. Their goal, and they state it regularly every day vocally, is to wipe you out. To exterminate every Jew, to eliminate Israel. So, that is the reality, and it's until Israel, from top to bottom, says it, then the future is really dire for the country. As an update, we are back up with Amazon. All the books have been. Almost all the books have been recovered in terms of images. We were able to buy my favorite image, which is a lovely picture of the great Isaiah scroll that now graces An Introduction to God,
Volume 1, 2, and 3.
And it was a lovely negotiation with the owner of that print to earn the right to use it. We have re-imaged the whole observation series with the lovely menorah and earth behind it that Jackie commissioned. And we came up with a team concept of a image for goddamn religion that has written in blood underneath a pretty vicious snake image, kill every Jew, with end quotes, and it actually put the three sources from which that quote was taken on the cover and then writes about it on the inside front cover and on the back cover. But there was concern that people would read right past the fact that it is a quote, that Muhammad said it, that we've given the three references and that we explain the reason we're using the quote. My goal, which was to be so bold that I could solve the problem that we did not have previously. When I wrote Prophet of Doom 20-some years ago, I met a publicist, the number one publicist really worldwide in terms of television and talk radio programs. And he agreed to take me on as a client for free. Normally you would pay thousands of dollars for a 3 to 4 minute radio spot and much more than that for a short television spot. And he took me on for free. And he booked something in the range of 5,000 interviews for me. Didn't charge me a dime. Almost every interview I did was initially booked for the typical 3 to 5 minute slots, and most of them lasted 1, 2, and 3 hours. Yeah. And almost every show that I ever did, I was invited back 10, 20, 30 times by the same host. And so you had 5,000 radio interviews and also television interviews and 20 years to promote Prophet of Doom. You had the worst terrorist act in the history of America as the springboard for it. I had the realization that I was the only American to meet with Al-Qaeda and live through the experience, and the fact that it was unique. No one had ever reordered the Quran chronologically and set it in the context of Muhammad's life. And at the time, I knew Islam better than any Muslim, and I debated imams in large public gatherings, sometimes as many as 5,000 people, to live radio audiences in large arenas. So after 5,000 radio interviews and 20 years of work, it made no difference. It had minor, actually significant difference in Iran, which was the highest readership per capita of Prophet of Doom. But it didn't resonate in Israel. It didn't resonate among Jews in America.
No.
Right.
And so my thought was, I need something on this cover that makes it impossible for Jews to ignore. Because we don't have 20 years. We have at most 2 years to 3 years, depending if you want to talk about the next hellacious attack on Israel or the time that Israel will forfeit her heartland to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2 to 3 years rather than 20 years, and now our outreach is on social media between Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and the like. Well, we are getting much, much better at that and much more effective, particularly with these movies with voiceovers.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that I had zero chance of garnering enough attention to actually awaken Israel to the nature of their enemy, and they need to know this is their enemy. So the idea was, write in blood below the image, kill every Jew, and put it in quotes and attribute it to Muhammad. The reality is that there was pushback. And, you know, my wife was one of them, says, you know, I really am uncomfortable with that image. And no one had pushed back on it, said, you know, we're not going to throw a hissy fit or anything else, but you really ought to rethink this, because if somebody doesn't read those quotes and they think you're saying it, you know, it's going to cause quite a commotion. And I said, good. That's the intent. That is the intent. but, you know, I'm in a different place than is everybody else.
Yeah.
I know this religion. I spent 9 months rewriting Prophet of Doom. I spent 2 years writing Prophet of Doom. I have been under the threat of Muslims promising to kill me for over 20 years.
Right.
But I know exactly what I'm up against. And I know what my job entails, which is to awaken Israel to the threats against her so that she can consider Yahweh's invitations. So understanding that, I thought it was a prudent risk. But I was in a minority, and I do not operate alone. Yes, you know, the nature of this role, if you look at the hundreds and hundreds of prophecies regarding it, speaks of a single individual. But just as Yahweh works through people on all things, so do I. Without the team,
yeah,
I do not succeed. So we have to have a supportive team, which is, in our case, a family. Without that family supporting this effort, we have no chance to prevail. So when, you know, I get pushback, I listen. And so my good friend, many of you know him as Yoel, happens to arrive here last night. He's going to be here for 3 or 4 days. And Yoel did a really nice job of creating that original AI image that then the team manipulated that is currently on the covers of a Introduction to God. And if you want that on a cover of one of your books to start a conversation, as I have ordered a bunch of them, better order them now because the cover is going to be replaced here forthwith. And today we worked on a new cover. And it is so powerful that it gives me goosebumps. It is just amazing. There's some subtleties to it whereby the star that you would normally see by the crescent in the Islam depiction, rather than being a star, is Allah written in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And better than that, the part of Allah's name in Arabic that looks like a snake is drawn in green. And the part that looks like a sword is in gold. And it is just chilling. And then, since the snake is representing Allah, who Muslims have to admit is part of their religion, because as they were talking about the building and rebuilding of the Kaaba, every time that the Kaaba is rebuilt, there's always a snake underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And the this time, so the snake, which is a viper with a split tongue, has woven into its body a skull in the shape of a crescent moon. And so you have Muhammad and Allah. And it says in blood-scratched finger, like it's like a blood-scratched finger writing on a wall, Islamic terror. It's gruesome. So it is an image that can't get me, can't get us taken off Amazon while we build our own store, while at the same time doing the job of being shocking.
Right.
And telling a very powerful story. So this is one of those many cases where you have to listen and make adjustments, and sometimes the end result is better than what you started with. So that's where we are, and I wanted to share that with you all. Tomorrow we'll work on the store so that we can sell our books directly, and also all apparel and other kinds of things that will be good for the family. On the writing, I finished the first volume of Twistianity. I have now entered the first 4 chapters, I think, now of the team edits. And we'll by early tomorrow morning, I will have the 5th chapter, and then they'll send me the rest as they finish it over the next few days. And we'll have the first volume of Twistianity ready, and it has a new image too. The wolf is much more vicious, and the sheep that it's wearing is now far more dignified and elegant with the ram with horns and golden fleece. I think your daughter was the one that drew in the golden fleece and colored the horns and it has this gruesome wolf with replacement theology under its paws. It's gripping too. We're making progress on this, and as soon as the other 3 volumes are completed of Christianity, Then I've got a little homework to do to resolve the fact that Dodd fulfilled the first three Moed Mikre. The fourth one is upcoming in Shavuah on Shavuah, which is May 22 in 2026, and that Teruah is actually going to occur on September 25th in 2033, 10 days prior to Dodd's return. So we have a little bit of cleaning up to do to get all the pieces right, and that's always a pleasure because we want to be right. We're growing, we're learning,
right.
And the goal is to be right. All right, that all said, we're going to return to where we were. We were covering a prophet that most people don't talk about very often. His name is Yoel. It's convenient because when Joe was doing this program with us, his name de plume was Yoel. It either means Joe is God or Yah is God. Which of the two? Yes. What's the difference, he says. What's the difference? For those who recall long ago, Joe maybe has a drier sense of humor than I do, and he is more sarcastic than I am, and that takes a lot because I work very hard at being sarcastic. All right, so we were on Yoel 2:2, and mm-hmm. What did you write in 2:2, Yoel? Do you recall? Yeah. He's sitting on the sofa. Yeah, Yoel sitting on the sofa in my office as we're doing this program. It is a day of darkness. It will be a day of darkness. During a time of ignorance and confusion, when much is obscured, when there will be a reduction in the sun's light, a day of obscuring phenomenon, gloomy and miserable. Similar to the swarthy blackness which is spread out upon the mountains, with an enormous number of dim-witted and unenlightened people, so numerous as to be uncountable, the likes of which has never existed previously, even to the dawn of time. Mm-hmm. After this, it will never occur again throughout the years, generations. Unto generation. We may be able to do the entire program this evening on just what this statement means and how mm-hmm. it is important to Israel. First of all, when God speaks of a time of darkness, of a day of darkness, are you guys familiar with the extended meaning of Arab in Hebrew?
Yes.
It means to be dark.
Yep.
It means to show ignorance and to be gloomy.
Mm-hmm.
And so by saying there's going to be a day of darkness, a time of ignorance and confusion when much is obscured, all you really need to do is to take all of those Muslim morons and progressives that are protesting around the world on behalf of Fakistan and on behalf of Islamic terrorists. And imagine them all armed, flooding into Israel with the desire to torture Jewish children, rape and dismember Jewish women, mutilate and abduct Jewish men. It is what occurred on October 7th times 1,000. Times 1,000. There won't be 3,000 angry, demented, confused jihadists perpetrating monstrous crimes. There'll be 300,000. There won't be 5,000 crude rockets that are fired into Israel. But between missiles, rockets, and drones, and anti-personnel rounds and artillery, the onslaught from the air is not going to be 5,000, but 500,000. It will so overwhelm the Iron Dome as to make it useless within the first 30 minutes of the conflict. And even if there were enough interceptors to last an hour, Israel would go broke in the process because they would be shooting down $1,000 aerial bombardments with $100,000 interceptors. Can't win that war. And with the missile barrage this time, and the the drones and the aerial bombardments totaling 500,000 projectiles, many of them will be far more accurately guided, and they will destroy Israel's infrastructure, electrical generation plants, some of her airports and Air Force bases, some of her ports, her offshore oil extracting fields, her hospitals, water treatment plants. Israel will be taken back into the Stone Age. And you could say, well, the same thing will happen, you know, to Lebanon and to Egypt and to Syria and to Jordan, from which these Islamic terrorists will come. So, let's say it's true. So what? Doesn't change the reality of what's going to happen to Israel. You know, imagine what happens if there are so many projectiles 1,000 times, which is what I was saying here. The 1,000 times more projectiles, and they're better guided and longer ranged, and they fly into Tel Aviv and into Jerusalem and throughout the most populated areas, and they're all ablaze. And they have no electricity, no water pressure, no ability to put out the fires. What then?
Right.
And at the same time, rather than 3,000 monsters, savages, coming in to rape and abduct and torture Jews, now there's so many that even if the IDF responded in time, they don't have enough bullets. The IDF that tries to stop them are just going to be part of the carnage. And so in the smaller communities, they will become nothing but prisons for Jewish hostages and rape victims, mutilation centers. And in the largest cities, they will be engulfed in flames. I'm not saying this because I want it to happen. I have risked my life to keep it from happening. I went through the cover and spent 9 months rewriting Prophet of Doom as goddamn religion to minimize the effect of it happening, to help Israel stop it from happening. But unfortunately, the politicians in Israel aren't willing to listen. The IDF has many good men that fight for it and rotten leaders. And the whole world has turned on Israel. So it's going to happen. And all you can do, if you're Jewish, is to be on Yahweh's side before it happens. Be part of his covenant, or you will be swallowed up in it. And there will be no negotiations this time for a truce, for a prisoner exchange. Not going to happen. And that is what you're up against. And God wants you to know that you're up against that. He is not doing it either. You've actually done it to yourself. Yeah. When you released 1,000 convicted terrorists to free one Israeli serviceman, you did it to yourself. When you started negotiating with Hamas terrorists because you wanted your hostages released and you were willing to negotiate with them and cave into their demands, you made it inevitable. When you didn't have the courage to make the deal that I suggested you make, You either release every hostage today or I destroy the Dome of the Rock. You release every hostage the following day. Should you renege on that decision, I'll destroy Aqsa Mosque, and I will tell the world how both of these structures are a complete embarrassment to Islam. She didn't do that. And so now you're in a position where all you're doing is abetting your own demise. And because you continue to speak of trying to improve the Palestinian Authority and to coming up with an Islamic government over Gaza, you just signed your own funeral invitation. It's what you've done.
Right.
And so God's telling you this is going to happen. It will be a day of darkness of Arab Muslims in particular, beyond the number that you can even count. As ignorant and as confused as they are. And much will be obscured because Jews themselves, as smart people, don't understand. They don't know who Yahweh is. They don't understand his covenant. They do not understand his Moed Mikre. They do not understand that the most religious among Jews are the most offensive to God. And they're a house divided. And so virtually every aspect of Israel is part of this problem.
Right.
When there is a reduction in the sun's light. You know who the sun is when Yahweh is talking about the sun's light.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dode. He's first mentioned in the opening chapter of Bereshith, Genesis. He is the greater luminary who is here for the Moed Mikre, which is what it says. He's fulfilled and is fulfilling and will fulfill all seven of them.
Yes.
And so that is who the sun's light is, and Israel has continued to obscure what he represents. Virtually no one in Israel speaks of him as being the Messiah. They're waiting for a nameless Messiah to return. Stowed. Israel is completely opposed to the idea of God having a son. Yet, Dode is the son of God. They can't wrap their hands or minds around the realization that Passover isn't a historical event. It is the event that opens up the door to heaven and to life, and that Dode himself was the Passover lamb. They don't even understand that unyeasted bread, matzah, is the single most important of the seven Moed Mikre, and it represents the time that Dode took the guilt of every covenant member with his soul and deposited it to Sheol, never to be seen again. No concept of that. No concept that the man that Yahweh refers to as his firstborn became the fulfillment of firstborn children, Bukurim. And because they don't understand these things, they can't capitalize upon them. And until you understand the role that Dode David, the Messiah, the King, the Zeruah, sacrificial lamb, our shepherd and savior played in fulfilling the Moed Mikre, then you're just a victim in waiting.
Right.
That is what he's talking about as a reduction in the sun's light.
Yes, sir.
It's a day of obscuring phenomenon. You know what the obscuring phenomenon is? It comes in three forms.
Religion,
politics, and conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the obscuring phenomenon. Religion, which is the worst. Politics is the second. And conspiracy is the third. Those are the obscuring phenomenon that keep God's people from recognizing this prophecy and what it represents. Gloomy and miserable are the result, similar to a swarthy blackness. Again, this is a flood of jihadists, more jihadists than can be counted. 1,000 times what happened on 10/7/23. Should you be interested in the timing of this, the putting all the pieces together, you know, I can tell you for certain what days certain events are going to occur, what days the prior three Moed Mikre were fulfilled, even to the hour. And the day the last two will be fulfilled right to the second.
Right.
The next two, I think we have a good understanding of. It's the only thing that fits the entire picture. So I'm going to go ahead and share it with you, and that will lead to the time that this flood of Islamic jihadists is going to occur. And when we read Yeshaya 17 and 18, the prophet speaks of America acting belligerently, which is what it's currently doing against Israel. That when America arms and abets Israel's foes and negotiates and enriches Israel's foes and ultimately abandons Israel and forces the so-called two-state solution, the final solution on the nation, which America is now the foremost advocate in the world. The Muslims don't want a two-state solution, by the way. They know that the Fakistanians are impossible. They have no interest in
right.
that. And even the Fakistanians don't want a two-state solution. They're not saying on their chants from the river to East Jerusalem. From the river to the sea. They want a one-state
right.
solution. And that is what they're
right.
demanding. And it's obvious. So when you read Yeshaya 17 and 18, and then you listen to what Dode, who was Gabriel, that's his name de plume, when he visited Daniel, speak about the timing of world events to come. He not only told us the exact day that he was going to arrive in Jerusalem, his city, to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE on our calendars. He actually told us when he was going to return. And he told us what was going to happen along the way. When you take that into consideration and the timing of that he gives us, the specific number of days and years with what we read elsewhere, the conclusion we come to is that the harvest of standing grain, which is both of Yehudim and Goyim, representing the two loaves, and it's wheats plural, so it's different types of wheat, that Goyim and Yehudim, then the largest harvest in the history of Yah's interaction with humankind, is going to occur on the Shabuah that is 7 years away from Yahweh's return. And that the time of Jacob's troubles, Jacob's is synonymous with Israel, the time of Israel's troubles, the word is sar for troubles, it means to narrow and to oppress, to subjugate. The time of that Israel will be narrowed and therefore the Islamic state carved out of its heart, where 70% of its people live, leading to carnage, is going to occur 7 years before Yahweh returns. Well, the Shabuah, that is 7 years before the year 6000 Yah return, is in 2026. The date of the Shabuah harvest is May 22nd. It is mm-hmm. a Shabbat. And so all evidence tells us that we can count on a very significant number of Goyim and Yehudim being harvested on Shabuah prior to this onslaught on the 22nd of May, 2026. And I would strongly encourage everyone listening, whether it be Goy or Jew, to take advantage of this opportunity. First of all, Yahweh's delightful to be around. His son is incredibly magnanimous. Being with him is vastly superior to being estranged from him. And he is offering the ultimate reward, eternal life in his presence, inheriting all he has to give. And if you accept this gift now, understand what he is offering and expecting in return through the five conditions and five benefits of the covenant and how they are delivered through the Moed Mikre. And you can learn all of that by going to yadayah.com and reading the books on the bookshelf there. They're all free. All 33 of them are free in their entirety. You can buy them at Amazon. We're back live with Amazon. They totally capitulated, said, oh, yeah, we're reinstalling you. Didn't have any, didn't find anything wrong. It just reinstalled us. Anyway, you can go and read those books, and you can buy them royalty-free at the cost of printing and shipping from Amazon. Or you can read them free online on whatever device you want to use. I would encourage you to do that, because if you do that and you do it soon, then you can spend all of your free time reading. Read every one of those 33 books. Read them all.
Yeah.
Some of them read twice. Most of the people who are productive in the Covenant family have read them 3, 4, and 5 times.
Easily.
And once you have, you own the material.
Yeah.
It becomes part of you. You just know it. You understand it. You can speak with authority on behalf of Yahweh. And for those who are listening who haven't done this, once you do that, then you have whatever time between now and May 22nd of 2026 to be productive. You can make any difference on eternity. People that wouldn't otherwise be part of it can be if you get off the sofa, stop playing video games, stop being distracted, and make your life count. You've got all eternity to celebrate. You're going to get your time back an infinite fold. But right now you've got the opportunity to be productive. And just to tell you how enormous this is, I was speaking with Yoel, and Yoel was really, really active, read all the books, helped edit the books, put the books on online, and was part of the show for lots of years. And then Yoel got off and was pursuing, as many have to do, his economic interest to take care of his family, and wasn't keeping up on what we had learned over the last 3 years in particular. It's interesting. His lovely wife, Mary, had, and Mary is a very active contributor now in the Covenant family. But Joe's changed. He decided, you know, maybe I got to come back up speed again. And the thing that is the hardest for somebody who has not been part of what we're doing for the last 3 or 4 years, but was connected with us, say, 5 years ago, is the
role. That's a big learning curve.
What's playing in all of this? It's not just the amazing discovery of who Dodd is and what he's done. It's also who we are and what we're doing.
Yeah.
And the fact that there are hundreds upon hundreds of prophecies regarding this, it's a really big deal from Yahweh's perspective. It's, you know, Christianity made an entire religion out of two mentions of Messiah. And yet this role isn't spoken of twice, but hundreds upon hundreds of times. And there isn't an unnamed reference to it. The references are named, and they're very long. There's entire chapters of Yahshayah devoted to it. You know, the first reference to it is in the first chapter of Bereshith. So it's a big deal. Why is it a big deal? Well, look at the problem Yah was facing. When he was with Jews 450 years ago, almost 3,500 years ago, just a few years shy of that, and removed them from Mitzrayim, the crucibles of human oppression, with a strong hand because they didn't know him, they didn't trust him, they didn't even like him. So with a strong hand, he removed them because the children of Israel wouldn't exist if Yahweh hadn't rescued them. They would have died there. And so he rescued them with a strong hand, and they hadn't gotten their shadows out of Mitzrayim before they started bellyaching. It didn't get any better. In fact, it got worse. They were miserable to God. And early on, God says, well, I'll tell you what, Moshe, so that I take some of the pressure off you, you gather all the people together. I'll come down off the mountain. I will reveal myself to them. I will speak directly to them. and I will tell them that I am not only God, but I'm the one that is inspiring these words for all the credibility that that will provide for you. So we did. And what did the Jews say?
Don't get him out of here.
Get him out of here. We never want to see him or hear from him again. Ever. God's a much more charactered and principled individual than I am. I probably would have said, okay, good riddance. See how you fend on your own. That's probably the way that I would have handled it. But, you know, I'm not the substance of Yah. Yah, though, had a very interesting approach. It's something so difficult for most people to wrap their minds around, they don't even think about it. But
right.
God said, I agree with them. I agree with them. That's what they want. I concur. We're going to give them exactly what they want. Now, why did Yahweh say that? Should be fairly obvious. Would you want to spend your time hanging around a bunch of ingrates who are embittered, complaining all the time, and are just miserable to be around, that don't want you to be part of their lives, who would prefer to make up false gods and to be religious? Of course not. So God had no interest in talking directly to them. If you could talk to Moshe and Dod or Yashaya, for example, these are really great men, brilliant men. Or you could talk to these embittered jerks who want to be making up their false gods. Who would you want to talk to?
Just keep Moshe.
Yeah, so I'm good with this. This works for me. But what does it do? When God makes a promise, he honors it. That means between now and the time that he returns, he's not going to ever speak directly to his people again, to Jews. Ever. And he hasn't. 100% of what he had to say was through individuals like Moshe, Dod, like Samuel, like Hosha, like my buddy Yashiah.
Right.
All of it. The last of the people that he spoke through was Malachi in 447 BCE. From that time, God said, you know, I looked for someone that would listen to me that I could speak through. I never found anyone. Not one. And so God's not going to speak directly to his people. He's going to speak through someone. If there's not a single person that's willing to walk away from religion and politics, be open to Yahweh's calling, to his name, to his purpose, to go where his words lead, to devote themselves to this mission, then there's no one for him to communicate with because he's not going to force them.
Right.
Now, Yahweh solved this problem actually before the universe was created because he knew it was going to happen because he could look at where our bad choices lead. He solved it in a very clever way. He says, my people won't listen to me. I'll get a goy. He may not be the sharpest tool in the shed.
He's pretty sure.
But I'll tell you what, with what I can do with him, is going to make all the difference. After 3,000 years of not listening to him, and there were only two very brief periods. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm aware of two very brief periods where Israel listened when people who were attuned to Yah spoke to them.
You are
one
correct.
Time it was very brief periods in Dod's life and maybe the first year or two of Solomon's rule. And now, most of the time under Dod, the people were rebellious. You know, they before he was king, they were following Shaul. They chose Shaul over Yahweh. And then when Dod power, he had that great Absalom rebellion. And so there were lots of times where Israel was not responsive to what the greatest of the prophets had to say, Dod, to them. And then the second was sometimes necessity is the great inventor. They had what was the largest army in the history of the ancient world, 185,000 Assyrians, that had gathered outside of Jerusalem to destroy it. And At that time, Hezekiah found a copy of the Torah somewhere stashed somewhere in Yahweh's covenant home in the temple. And he read it and said, "Holy crap, are we in trouble?" I think that's probably the term that he used. And wasn't there at the time, but I'm pretty sure that's what he had to say. We're in trouble. And first thing he did is he said, for us to have any chance of solving this problem, we have to remove all traces of religion. First time it happened in the history of Israel. And the evidence of this is been found through archaeology. All religious artifacts in the province of Judea, the northern kingdom was already gone. The Assyrians had destroyed it. All religious artifacts anywhere around the province of Judea were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hezekiah started training the Lowi, the Levite, Koshan priests, on what their job was and how they were supposed to communicate the meaning of the covenant and the Moed to the children of Israel. And then Hezekiah says, there is no way I can get this done in between now and the time of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim, and there's 185,000 Assyrians ready to kill us. What am I going to do? And he went to Yahweh and said, I can't get this done in 2 weeks. I'm trying. Can we have a two-week extension? We'll celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim, but we need 2 weeks to do it right as opposed to do it now and do it wrong. God said, fine. I got no problem with that. He held the Assyrians at bay. They started celebrating Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim. As it was intended, they removed all traces of religion. 185,000 Assyrians died in fire shot. In the last couple of months, they found the encampments of those Assyrians. And, of course, a number of years ago, they found a written inscription in Assyria of specifically of this incident and the failure of it from the Assyrians' perspective. Occurred just as Yahweh said. Those are the only two times, no other times that I'm aware of. So if you've gone 2,900 years without having any Jews respond to Yahweh, 2,500 from the last of them that was Malachi, but in terms of a community of Jews, 3,000 years. What was going to change that was going to cause the Teruah and Shavuah harvest to take place? Would there be one person there or none for Shavuah?
Mm-hmm.
When the Teruah harvest came around, would there be one person there or none?
Mm-hmm.
All evidence is that over the 2,500 years, there had been none. God said there were none. There would have been none. How do you fulfill a harvest if there's nothing to harvest?
Right.
And then the day of reconciliation when Yahweh is returning with Dod, and it's all this great family reunion, if there's no family there at all, and there wouldn't have been, there's no reason for God to return. And if he doesn't return, there's no Shavuah harvest, no Teruah harvest, no return on Yom Kippurim. There most certainly is no fulfillment of Sukkah, of camping out together for 1,000 years. It's all for naught.
Right.
The entire human experience. We blow ourselves to smithereens. We kill ourselves. We end life on the planet. And there's nothing left. It's all for naught. So darn right. Yahweh had a lot to say about the role that we're playing, because it's what's making the difference in this world. And that's why he wants you, if you're a Yisraelite, to listen. It will be a day of darkness during a time of ignorance and confusion, when much is obscured, when there is a reduction in the sun's light, a day of obscuring phenomenon, gloomy and miserable, similar to the swarthy blackness which is spread out upon the mountains, with an enormous number of dim-witted and unenlightened people is so numerous as to be uncountable, the likes of which has not existed previously, even to the dawn of time. I did a study on this to find out what the largest armies that had ever been assembled, how many. And this will be the largest ever.
Wow.
And they're all coming into a narrow little tiny place savagely to torture, rape, abduct, and murder Jews to destroy it. And there's only one way out, Yahweh. And what Yahweh realizes that although he is not establishing this time of trouble, it is inevitable, it's man's choices, that with their backs
right.
up against the wall, the realization the IDF cannot save them, the realization there is no politician worth listening to, the realization their rabbis were only right about one thing. They're dressed in their black mourning suits for their own funeral. Other than that, they got nothing right. That with their backs up against the wall, some will listen. And that is why we have this message prepared for them. And after this, it will never occur again. Because there will be a Shavuot harvest. Because there will be a Teruah harvest. Because there will be a family reunion on Yom Kippurim. Because there will be lots of celebration as we camp out with Yahweh forevermore.
We have been getting a question, if you don't mind me interrupting you.
Sure.
Lot of people are asking, after the Shavuot harvest, will there be another chance for people that are not in Israel to be harvested on, say, a Teruah or is Shavuot the final call for the nations abroad?
No, I think that, first of all, Shavuot is the big harvest. If you don't make the Shavuot harvest, your chances of surviving are exceedingly small because there's very little time left. There's going to be a period of a number of years where there's not going to be a witness other than our books and these audio programs and social media. The echoes of what we have done are going to be the only thing for people to pay attention to. And Jews around the world are going to be fighting for their lives. So the sure bet is Shavuot. And so rather than say, what about if we don't make Shavuot, what are the opportunities? That's the wrong approach.
I agree.
The only sure way out is Shavuot. Capitalize on Shavuot, or your chances are not non-existent, but they're really low. Now, the Teruah harvest is a different harvest. Shavuot is of standing grain. It's wheat. There are two loaves, Goyim and Yehuda. That is not the case with Teruah. Teruah is described as an olive harvest. There's two or three from the uppermost branches. That would be Yehudim. There are four or five from the broken off branches that were separated. That would be Yisraelites. It's a harvest of God's people. It is a much smaller harvest. There could be as few as 7,000 people that are part of that harvest.
Right.
That harvest will be prompted largely by the work of the two witnesses during the last 3.5 years. And so there's really not a lot of time to position oneself to capitalize on that. Yahweh is always willing to accept a goy who accepts Israel, a goy who accepts the same Torah, who accepts the same covenant, who accepts the same Moed Mikre, accepts his same son, as the Yehudim do. So even though it is a harvest intended for Yisraelites, I suppose, in fact, yeah, I would be inconsistent if this wasn't possible, for a goyim who is sojourning, if you will, with Israel to be part of it, to be grafted into those branches. But you're going to have to be grafted into a branch that the world despises.
Right.
Okay, so that's keep that in mind. And also understand that while the time between May of 2026, when the terrorist state of Islam will be carved out of the heart of Israel, to the time of this final war, this invasion of Israel in such numbers that they obscure the horizon, that they are uncountable, that it's beyond anything that has occurred before. That from the time that the two-state solution is imposed or accepted, and the time this occurs is likely 13 months. And the reason we think this is 13 months is we read the statements that Gabrielle, who is Dode, who clearly knows, spoke about in terms of the things that were going to occur during the last 3.5 years. And this event, if we're reading him correctly, is going to occur 13 months after the May 22nd day, which I think is a day in June of 2027, is when this is likely to occur. Now, that doesn't mean that Hezbollah doesn't continue to lob rockets and there are ongoing skirmishes there, but they're not intending to go mildly into Israel. They're intending to have nuclear bombs. They're intending to have an arsenal the size of the 500,000 munitions aerial bombardment that I've spoken of.
Mm-hmm.
So this will put them in at that timeline.
And that would be
so
June 16, 2027.
Yeah. So, yeah, then there is a gleaning, that is really Teruah is a gleaning, but there is also the homecoming of Yehudim on Yom Kippurim. And mm-hmm. it could be hundreds or thousands of Jews, but you know, the difference is we've had basically 3,500 years of exposure to the Torah and prophets to prepare ourselves to be harvestable on Shavuot. So I've had my whole life, and generation on generation was available before me. It's been a long time, plenty of time, ample time to be part of this harvest. I've been studying this now for 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
Teruah is a different story. On Teruah, since it's only 7 years from the Shavuot harvest, the most mature that any Yehudim or Yisraelite can be is in the covenant family is 7 years. That is the absolute mm-hmm. most, and most of them are going to be much less than that. We're going to have a lot of very immature people who make the right decision, but at the last possible moment. And then when you get
right
to that final remnant, after all mm-hmm. hell breaks loose in Israel and Jerusalem, now he's removed his family twice. So Yah was doing the right thing. He's removing his family from the worst of this and the worst of the worst of it. And that last 10 days is going to be literally hell, where life would be extinguished on earth if he doesn't intervene. But there will be a remnant of Yisrael who will be there in Jerusalem who will be looking up to him. On the Teruah harvest, I don't think the specificity of being in Israel is an absolute necessity. But nonetheless, the witnesses will be in Israel. And it's a olive harvest, and the olive is rooted in Israel. So the wise thing to do is to be in Israel at that time.
Right.
And, of course, for the Yom Kippurim return, it is to Jerusalem. And so that's the only place you can be and capitalize upon it. And once this occurs, we move into a period where Yahweh restores the earth to the conditions experienced at Gan Eden in the Garden of Great Joy. And there is no more religion, no more conspiracy, no more politics. None of these things exist at that point. The conditions are the kind of same celebration of life and of a relationship with Yahweh that existed with Adam and Yahweh so many years ago, almost 6,000, in fact, 9 years shy of 6,000 years ago was when they were in the garden. And so that's how this concludes. Powerful statement. Mm-hmm. Israel, that's the reason why the cover of Goddamn Religion now says that says Islamic terrorism. This is what it's talking about. Well, yeah, it was light, but he is arriving at the darkest moment in our planet's turbulent history, both from the actual obscuration of the sun's illumination from debris in the atmosphere, but also from human religious and political and military malfeasance, all designed to confuse the ignorant at the last opportune time. You should know that there will be a solar eclipse on Terua in 2033, year 6000 Ya. Those are rare, but there's a full solar eclipse on the day of Terua. And you should know that as we move past the fulfillment of Kippurim to the first day of Sukkah in year 6000 Ya, 33 CE, there is a full lunar eclipse. That is an extremely rare occurrence to have both in the same year. But that is what's going to happen. That same year, by the way, on Pesach and first of Abib, and also on the fulfillment of Pesach and Matzah, there will be a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse. So it is it's a special year for heavenly fireworks. There will be lots of reasons for the sky to be obscured. There's likely going to be issues related to worldwide fires from the effects of global warming, and it is occurring. It's a part of a natural earth and cycle. But that is likely. There will be likely a volcanic event that spews enormous amounts of ash into the sky. It is likely that there will be nuclear war with all of the crud that stirs up in the atmosphere. And you can't have that many Muslims and that many bombardments and that many fires caused by them without obscuring the sky. Look at Hezbollah now trying to burn down the north of Israel. So there's lots of reasons that the sky will be obscured. And, of course, prior to this time, far too people know Dode, who is returning as brilliant as the sun. Yoel has deployed, in this one passage, Joel 2:2, the full arsenal of words depicting a deprivation of light. And that is why I turned to the root of Am, people, which is Amam, to convey the cognitive function of this invading horde, which is dim-witted and unenlightened. The average IQ of the Muslims living around Israel is about 70, which the old term for that was mentally retarded. Now they say mentally disabled or mentally handicapped. But since they're Muslims, we can say it's just stupid. God said it. Why can't we say it? In some cases, at least when associated with Israel, Am can mean family. And on rare occasion, when depicting foes, as is the case here, Am is correctly translated as militants or army. But in this situation, there are two things which the prophet wants us to appreciate, and there are going to be more of them than can be counted, suggesting hundreds of thousands or even perhaps a million belligerents, and that they have arrived as thick and menacing as blowing sand off the desert, a haboob of Mujahideen. I particularly love the alliteration of haboob. But you can look it up. It's an actual term. It means a sandstorm. It's an Arabic term that is blinding. And, of course, this haboob will be Mujahideen. Mujahideen has at its roots jihad. So they are jihadists. Yeshaya also addresses this moment in the 17th and 18th chapters of Yeshaya, Isaiah. Saying that upon the narrowing of Israel at the waist, the final solution, I could also call it the final disillusion, that there will be a massive flood of combatants. He speaks of them being far more than can be counted, far more than can be restrained. To put this largest ever pronouncement in perspective, the largest invading army at the time this was written would have been 185,000, the Assyrians, who were sent to besiege Jerusalem in 701 BCE. By comparison, Alexander the Great, he had less than 50,000 men at his command. In antiquity's greatest battle, Rome put 86,000 troops up against Hannibal's 60,000 Carthaginians during the Battle of Cannae in Italy in 216 BCE. You know, collectively, that's less than half of the number that's going to invade Israel. And speaking of the Romans, a legion was comprised of 5,000 soldiers, and four of them were brought to bear against Judea in 70 CE, and three were brought in 133. Genghis Khan, one of the greatest marauders of all time, amassed a highly mobile army of nearly 200,000 warriors, but they were never deployed in any single invasion. While the Germans sent upwards of 5 million men into the Soviet Union, they did not arrive at or fight at the same time. They were many sent in to reinforce those who were slaughtered before them. So if looking for the largest invasion force ever deployed, it would be D-Day's Operation Overlord in June 1944. Just over 130,000 troops landed on Normandy's beaches, with only 120 living to survive the day. In contrast to this, 3,500 Muslim mujahideen were sufficiently savaged last year to bring Israel to its knees. This next invasion will be so massive. Islamic jihadists will darken the hills. They will stir up vast amounts of dust as if forming a tsunami of sand. They will number over 130,000 and could total 6 to 10 times that number. And yet, the good news is that man will never be this bad again. This will be the worst incident in all of human history, perpetrated by Muslims against Jews. This will be the last battle. And the Muslims looking for booty and babes will soon know that they have entered hell. As they approach, fire will consume them. And behind them, a flame blazes as the land and earth come to resemble Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, the great joy. Before them, behind them is a desolate and unpopulated wasteland clothed in horror. And in addition, there is no escape or deliverance from them. Oh, I have a great love for the words of my king, Dode, and for my brother, Yashaya. And I have more respect for Moshe than any man in human history. But it's hard not to have a bit of a bromance with Yoel. This man was so articulate. I have a passion for painting pictures with words. And yet, this may have been among the most articulate of all prophets. He says, as they approach, file, you know, he's seen this. He's witnessed this. He knows where the future is going. As they approach, fire will consume them. Behind them, fire blazes. What is the best way to rid the world of trash without having any of the pathogens that typically grow out of garbage. Incinerate it, right?
Incinerate.
They're going to be incinerated. And listen, they're not innocent. This is not like Allah taking all disbelievers into hell and torturing them forever. No. These people came with a singular purpose: to torture, to abduct, to rape, to mutilate, and to murder Jews. They will have earned what happens to them. They will deserve what happens to them. And so as they approach, fire will consume them. Because Yahweh will allow them to go to the point where there is no other opportunity, where the last option for free will and for his people to choose him expires, and where the only option is for him to put an end to it. And he will do so. And that is why this fire is occurring.
At this point, it's merciful to do so.
Yes. And one of the things that I think I was the first person ever to write about this that just seemed so obvious to me, and this goes back now probably 15, 18, 20 years ago. So, you know, the story of the Garden of Eden is being told for a reason. And the seventh of the Moed Mikre, the destination that God is taking us to of camping out together, sounds a lot like Eden. It's pretty obvious that the story God is telling us is he created this perfect environment for us to enjoy life together. And that we rebelled, so he came up with a means to open the door to clean us up of all the religious and political gunk that we had affiliated with, and to readopt us, and then harvest us, and reconcile his relationship with us so we could go back to the garden and camp out again.
Right.
It was so obvious this was God's idea of a good time. And what do we read here? That the earth is going to come to resemble Gan Eden again. It's a statement, a conclusion that I've thrown out for 20 years. And here it is in black and white. The earth will come to resemble Gan Eden, the great joy before them. Behind them, a desolate wasteland. Now, that depopulated, desolate wasteland is to say that none of those who are coming to attack Israel, and more importantly, this speaks of the Gazans, which I say are not civilians, all of those who educated and indoctrinated them and armed them and equipped them and celebrated them leaving to go destroy Israel and annihilate Jews in genocidal rage, God's going to take care of all of them too, because they're not innocent.
Right.
That's the fire that is behind them. That is that lifeless, depopulated wasteland that is clothed in horror, from which there'll be no escape. God's not going to send his covenant family with rifles into the Islamic world and say, be careful of the little civilians now. Don't harm the baby vipers. This is how he's going to handle it. And he's right. And it's what needs to be done. Yep. And the whole earth will be purged of religion and politics and militancy and conspiracy. There will be no escape. And at this time, there'll be no deliverance. You're either with Yahweh and you're there as part of the Shavuah harvest, part of the Teruah gleaning, or the great family reunion on Yom Kippurim, or you're toast, quite literally. That is the story that God is telling. Now, for those who have read Goddamn Religion, with its, to order it now if you want to kill every Jew, that quote on the cover. Otherwise, sometime tomorrow, my guess is it's going to be replaced with Islamic Terror. The new cover really is, though, compelling. You know that throughout the Quran, Allah was preoccupied with roasting almost everyone in hell's fires. The kafar are the principal roastees. It's from a Hebrew word. Kafar means to reconcile. It's the basis of Kippurim. It's the basis of Kippurah, the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And so Allah's fixation is on those who have been reconciled because they're the ones that preclude his victory. Because of Yada Yahweh and what Yahweh has done to enable Yada Yahweh, there will be reconciled Yehudim. And with reconciled Yehudim, Satan loses. Yahweh prevails. The remaining Moed Mikre are carried out as they were foretold. And so Allah dreams about roasting kafar in his hell fires forever. So when it is the Muslims that are roasted by Yahweh for coming to dispatch Jews to the hellfire, this is going to come as a rather shocking role reversal. Rather than the virgins that they were expecting as part of Allah's pay for slay, they're going to experience what Allah threatened the Jews with in hell. So it'll be interesting to see the expressions on the faces of those militants who were believing that Allah would dish up a decadent treat rather than Yahweh being there to incinerate them. Don't gloat if you're a rabbinic Jew, if you are into the Haredim cult, because you will not survive any of this. Now, this is the best possible news for the survivors among the Jewish people, because not only are the Muslim Mujahideen thwarted in their sadistic desires, not until after, by the way, they perpetrated enormous carnage, and then consumed in flames, the blaze is transformative, leaving beautiful gardens in its wake. On one side is the horror of religion. On the other side is a loving and joyous relationship with God. This is the final assault against the Promised Land, even with militants buttressed by militaries. They will be no match for God. Although it is possible that Shush, which can be rendered as either something which flies or a war stallion, could speak of a barrage of missiles, rockets, or drones replicating what occurred just 9 months ago in Israel. I now want to share Yoel 2:4 with you. It reads, "There will be what could be compared to the appearance of," this is the Shush, "Swiss flying armaments and war transports. This phenomenon could be perceived as being similar to armored personnel carriers and mobile cavalry, especially pertaining to the way they run and are driven in pursuit of their foes. As with the loud roar and thunderous rumbling of these wheeled military vehicles upon the summits of the mountains, their leaders seek the high ground as they leap about, springing into the air like a crackling of flame, fire devouring the stubble. Such is the nature of this multitude of unenlightened people, this vast and severe throng of militants, drawn up, aligned, and arranged war. From their presence, the people tremble and shake, writhing in anguish, terrorized and tormented. Every face becomes flushed and pale. Like warriors, they charge ahead, quickly chasing their prey. As men of war equipped with weapons, they scale barriers, protective barricades, blockades, and walls. Each individual travels in his own route for the cause. They do not renounce their pledge or swerve from their path of conduct." Yahweh wants Jerusalem and Jews, Yehudim, to know that while this will be the greatest onslaught the world has ever seen, the single worst that man has ever perpetrated on humanity, and that it is unavoidable apart from those who are harvested and miss it because they experience Teruah and Shavuah, that while this will occur, and while he has promised that at the end of this great conflict, that he will conduct urban renewal. Sometimes we as people have this tendency to read through something, that's really bad, but it has a happy ending. Let's go on to the next item in the story. God knows his people. He says, no, don't do that. Let me share with you really how bad this is going to be. Because you don't want to be there. And so after telling us what's going to happen and that there is a happily ever after, he says, I really want to make sure I have your attention. This is what you should be expecting. Because God's not going to intervene in 2026, 2027, 2028, 2029, 31, or 32, or even early 2033. He's not going to intervene until the seventh month on the Hebrew calendar, which will be October, early October, in your 6,000 Yah, 120th Yobel year, which is 2033 CE. That is when he's going to intervene. And so over the ensuing 7 years, and particularly during the last 3 years of this, it's going to be hell.
Yeah.
Jewish women are going to be abused. Jewish children are going to be mutilated. Many, many Jews are going to die. It's going to be the most horrendous battle that humankind has ever experienced. And it's all going to be focused in one place. Now, I'm quite certain that the way that the United States has managed to array the world, where we have pushed Russia and China and Iran together, and the United States is in partners with Europe, that this is going to be a world war, because everybody will have a stake in this. China is becoming exceedingly involved. They just brought Hamas and the Palestinian together in a pretend handshake.
Mm-hmm.
They have more influence in the Middle East now than does America. And they are exceedingly tight with Russia and with Iran. So this is likely to break out into world war. Now, it's not going to tell us much about how many Americans die or Europeans die or Russians or Chinese die in this war, because he didn't give a crap. Quite frankly, does not care. The Goyim are almost universally opposed to him. The Goyim, they're not opposed to him. He's going to harvest on Shavuah. And so the rest of them, he does not care about. He's not trying to save them. He's trying to spare a remnant of his people.
Right.
So they can be part of his family forevermore. And in this regard, he wants Israel to know what's going to happen to them. And he says that what's going to happen could be compared to swift-flying armaments and military transports. Just view what happened on 10-7-2033 and multiply it by a minimum of 1,000. And that's what he's describing here. The phenomenon could be perceived as similar to armored personnel carriers and mobile cavalry, especially pertaining to the way they run and are driven in pursuit of their foes. With a loud roar and thunderous rumbling, the noise is going to be overwhelming, of these wheeled military vehicles upon the summits of the mountains as they descend into Israel. They will leap about, springing into the air. You see Muslims celebrating their carnage.
Right.
Be cackling and crackling like a flame, like a devouring flame eating the stubble. Such is the nature of this multitude of enlightened people, this vast and severe throng of militants, all arranged for war. And so their presence is going to terrorize Israel. To be a Jew anywhere in the world now is to live in fear. They will perpetrate great anguish and torment on God's people. And the only expression then will be to be flush and pale. Like warriors, they're going to charge ahead. They will chase down their prey, savages. These men armed with weapons. They will do as they did in Gaza. They're going to scale the barricades. They're going to rip through the fences, the walls. They're going to enter Israel from all sides. Each individual travels a different route, which means they're going to come 360 degrees into Israel. The pledge is the pledge of Aqaba, to wage war against all mankind. That is the beginning of the Islamic era. It will be the end of the Islamic era. It defines their path through life and their conduct. Other than being responsible for committing 90% of the world's most heinous terrorist acts, Muslims aren't very good at most things. Although we can count on them for being boisterous, agitated, just as this prophecy foretells. They also fit the bill when it comes to being unenlightened and militant, in addition to numbering in the billions. Further, not only are they all aligned against Jews and overwhelmingly in favor of war with Israel, as we have seen, as we have heard, they have a thing for scaling walls and invading protective barriers. Also insightful, the single most defining event in Islam was the Pledge of Aqaba, which was a declaration of war against all mankind. Here we are told that they will not renounce their vow to kill. They will continue to fight in Allah's cause until death, which is why Yahweh will be accommodating them. But before he does, Muslims will reenact October 7th, 2023 on an even more sadistic and macabre scale. Yoel 2:9. Walking around with their weapons, they attack without relenting. They rush into the city, from within the walls and barriers, running into the houses by climbing through the windows, entering like thieves. When Muslims enter the homes of Jews, they rape the women. They even rape the men. They mutilate them. They cut off their fingers and toes, their legs. They continue to rape both women and men while they are dead. They will burn little children alive. They will cut off their fingers and toes. They'll gouge out their eyes. They will pee on them. These are inhuman savages. That is what Islam does to people. It is why I'm so opposed to Islam. The world doesn't get it. It's not Hamas. It's Islam. And this is what the prophet saw. That's why I put on the cover of that book, Kill Every Jew. It's a quotation directly from Muhammad. Walking around with their weapons, they attack without relenting. They rush into the city from within the walls and barriers, running into the houses by climbing through the windows. They enter like thieves. This is your future because you didn't have the guts to realize that your war was against Islam, that they had declared war on you 1,400 years ago, because you didn't have the courage to say there is no such thing as a Palestinian. because you were so caught up in your progressive politics and your disgusting, ancient, primitive religious rites that you wouldn't even say your God's name. That you pay no attention to him. And as a result, this is what's going to happen. And it is going to be a living horror. This will be far worse than the Holocaust. Germans were savages. They rounded Jews up. They put them into train cars. They stole all their property. And those they didn't starve and work to death, they incinerated after they had killed them with a cyanide gas. That's not what's going to happen this time. They're not going to kill Jews with gas. They're going to mutilate them. They're going to rape them. They're going to savage their dead bodies. They're going to torture their children. They're going to do this not in a concentration camp, but in their own homes. This is the plague of Islam, as it is presented in the Quran, as it was lived by Muhammad, as it was showcased on October 7th of 2023. And here is Yoel, the prophet whose name means Yahweh is God, the one thing the Jews still will not admit, telling you exactly what's going to happen, and you're unwilling to do anything about it. He is not mentioning Hamas. Here, Hamas is meaningless. Wake up, Israel. Your God is trying to get your attention. It is as if Yoel has taken us forward in time to witness the Muslim atrocities that have been and will once again be perpetrated against his people. This is precisely what occurred. It is what's going to occur. Make no mistake, Muslims are a special kind of savage. Unlike any other militants in the history of the world, they are far more perverted, ruthless, and cruel. The earth will shake before them. The heavens will be shaken. The sun and the moon will grow dark, and the stars, their brightness, will be taken away. Even heaven's going to cry.
Yes.
God himself will cry. I have known this is going to happen for years. I have written about it. I've devoted my life to warning Israel about it, to taking Israelites away from it through these harvests. And yet I'm going to cry. But I will tell you one thing is for certain. There is a something that happened or will happen that I was at one time exceedingly opposed to. And that is that Yahweh and Dodd are going to do as they have always done. They're going to delegate. And when it comes to condemning and holding these Muslims accountable, God has already chosen his delegate. And I'm going to tell you, I will show no mercy. For the sake of the children whose fingers and toes they cut off and whose eyes they gouged out, as their parents had to watch them torment their children, and then they did the same thing to each of the parents and then peed on them and giggled while they did so, I will tell you that you're going to wish you hadn't done it, because I'm going to assure that you are tortured many, many times worse than the torture you inflicted. Because being sent to the place of separation into Sheol hell is not enough for what you have done. and for all of the Muslims in the West who are fanning the flames of Islamic terrorism, I'm going to hold you accountable too. I'm going to be your worst nightmare.
Great.
And it is a job that I did not want because I'm squeamish. I just do not like it when anyone suffers pain. I am a nonviolent person. I have always in my life chosen to use words. I will use words bluntly and boldly and powerful, but I encourage people to find nonviolent solutions to their problems. It's going to change. Divine retribution is necessary for God to be just, and he is not going to change his personality at this last moment. And so there will be a series, not really of trials, because there's going to be nothing but convictions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get this done. I don't know how long it will take us to get it done, but I know that Yahweh wants us to do it. And when it comes to understanding the ill effects of Christianity, the ill effects of Islam, the ill effects of progressives, and the harm they have perpetrated on God's people, along with the Nazis and these Roman Catholics over the years, I don't think anyone is well read or studied as I have become.
Yeah.
And so as much as I love Israel and will stand for and offer my life for Israel, I'm going to make certain that those who have come to harm Israel will be held accountable. The earth will quake before them, but I will tell you that they will quake before us. The heavens will be shaken, and the sun and the moon will grow dark. The sun is Dod. I am the moon in this metaphor. And you might say, wait a minute, what do you mean? How is Dod the sun? God calls him the greatest luminary. He's going to return as brilliant as the sun. He is the source of light in our world going forward. But as I say, like father, like son, he's going to delegate. What is the moon? It's a source of reflected light. What light does it reflect? The sun's.
If anyone has an issue with it, they can just read Mizmor 132:17. It answers the question.
It does. It does. In fact, in the rewrite of Volume 1 of Twistianity, we were dealing with the sun and the moon, and as it relates to Mizmor 89. And I was motivated by something that Dee had said in passing to finally figure out why it speaks of the sun and moon at this time on this occasion. And I finally figured it out. That is the role that we're playing.
Mm-hmm.
God is really serious about the role that we're playing at this time, because if we don't do this and we don't do this well, the entire human experience is for naught. That doesn't mean that we're special. It doesn't mean that we're unique. It just means that we were the one thing that God needed, willing.
And as you just said, the crescent moon devours these individuals, and your role as the, you know, the guide of the full moon, reflecting Dod, fulfills the feast.
Yep.
It makes sense, but the crescent moon is a ram's horn, a teruah horn, a shofar that is aggressive. It's a ram coming to fight.
Yes. And, of course, the full moon occurs at Pesach and Sukkah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's under the time that Dod was the most brilliant. He will never be more brilliant than he is and the fulfillment of those dates.
Right.
And so this prophet, Yoel, has told Israel exactly what's going to occur. We have repeated it. We hope that Israel listens. We hope that Dee, you, and Molly, and my wife, Leah, are able to create some wonderful movies of this and get people's attention.
Right.
From heaven's perspective, this darkness is a great sadness. even though it's a very short period of time, but how savage humans can be, how demented and demonic a religion like Islam can make Muslims. They will be out of their minds when ravaging God's people. And we know that 3,000 mujahideen were so barbaric they left a permanent scar on Israel on 10/7/23. So it's hard to even fathom the havoc that 1,000 times that number will cause. But this is exactly what Yahweh is telling Israel will occur. And while these Muslims will be intent on genocide, Jews should be forewarned that they are readily distracted by rape and plunder, even sadistic torture, as these things were encouraged by their wannabe God and false prophet. It is great savagery. And it doesn't make any difference if a Jew is in Israel or not in Israel, that in this particular case, because the entire world now is far worse than the conditions experienced at the prelude to the Holocaust. Now it's a worldwide event, and it's particularly prevalent among the young and among progressives, the elitists, and among Muslims who number in now to the 2 billion and who permeate all of the capitals of Europe and the United States and the West, and who surround Israel. So this is what we face. It doesn't matter where you live. There's only one escape, complete escape, and that's to be part of the Shabuah harvest. Join us for it. Read Yada Yahweh. Be productive between now and then. And if you miss the Shabuah harvest and you're able to hear these words, then by all means, join Yahweh's covenant family on Teruah. Listen to Yada and Elia, as they call you back home. And of course, for those foolish enough not to capitalize on either of those harvests, the final meeting is a remnant of God's people on Kippurim. But after that time, it's all over. So please, time is running out for you to make the right choice. I think this is probably a good place for us to stop this this evening. It sounds dreadfully sad, and it is dreadfully sad.
It is.
But there is a happy ending. There is a happily ever after. There is an opportunity for you to be part of it. There is no excuse. Those of you who have heard this program know what you need to do. You need to walk away from religion. You need to stop being political. You need to embrace Yahweh's name. You need to understand that there's five conditions of the covenant and five benefits, and those benefits are provided through the fulfillment of the Mikra, that Dod was the Passover lamb, that he perfected us on matzah and showed us the way home on firstborn children, and that the next harvest that is enabled because of what Dod David did as our Savior, the Zeruah, the sacrificial lamb, as our Messiah and King, is on Shabuah, the harvest of the standing grain, 7 years before this all comes to a crashing end, as we're reading here, which will be May 22nd of 2026. Please join us before then. May Yah bless. May you have a wonderful rest of your Shabbat. I hope that we have your ear this time next week. I don't think it's possible for Yahweh to have found a more articulate prophet to tell you what's going to happen, so that you don't have to endure it. Please listen to your God. May Yah bless. Good night.
Good night, Joe.
Night, guys.
Night.
Are you holding your breath while you request your ride? Or are you holding your breath once you're inside? I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto. Stop playing rideshare roulette. Download the Alto app to experience professionally trained employee drivers and company-owned luxury SUVs with our own pleasant signature scent. Try your first ride free with code SUMMER. Download the Alto app or visit ridealto.com/radio to learn more.
Your word is formaldehyde.
Can you use it in a sentence?
As you're sitting in your basement, you hit your vape, but then your mom walks in, freaks out, and starts listing the toxic chemicals you could be inhaling into your body, like formaldehyde, which she singles out because it's the same chemical used to preserve your Uncle Rico's funky-smelling taxidermied fox. Formaldehyde. Vaping can expose you to toxic chemicals like formaldehyde. No need to spell it out any more than that. Brought to you by The Real Cost and FDA.